Welcome to the show, where truth takes the mic, where the world spins fast, but we hold it tight. This is the Howie Silbiger Show on True Talk Radio, where the real ones go. Oh, politics, passion, the news of the day, no filter, no fluff, just the Silbiger way. So buckle up tight, let the debates flow. This is your hour, the Howie Silbiger Show. Silbiger Show. Silbiger Show.
And good evening. My name is Howie Silbiger. Welcome to the Howie Silbiger Show right here on the True Talk Radio Network. You could call in. Number to call, 1-877-669-1292. That's 1-877-669-1292. That's the number to call to get in on the conversation here on the Howie Silbiger Show on the True Talk Radio Network. We will start with a story that has been bugging me for a few days already. We're doing the show. We're going to do the show more often. But this week, it's been a tight week. And so this story has been bothering me for a few days already. It's the story of a man who decided to walk down the street in Ville Saint-Laurent and yell, "We are going to kill you, you effing pigs," to a Jewish guy, to a guy wearing a kippah. Now, the man was promptly arrested. Kudos to the police for promptly arresting him. And he went to court almost immediately. And the court released the man. They charged him. They gave him bail. And they released him back onto the street. They gave him some conditions. You can't go anywhere near your victims. You can't stand on the street and yell that you're going to kill people. And you really have to stay away from the people you want to kill. These were the conditions he had from court. You have to stay away from the people you want to kill. Community leader, Hasidic community leader, Mayor Fake said, "This is very disappointing. Things have to change." An understatement, if you ask me. Let me understand something. And you could correct me if I'm wrong. You could call in. I'd be more than happy to hear from you. But this is how I understand things. If a man stands in the street and says, "I want to kill you," we have to believe that he wants to kill us. As Jews, we understand that people who say we want to kill you actually believe it. They mean it. And we should believe them. We should take them very seriously. So if somebody says to me, "I want to kill you, you're a Jew and I want to kill you," I take them extremely seriously. At the same time, when the courts release those people back onto the street, so the person on the street yells, "You effing pig, I'm going to kill you," and then gets arrested for yelling that "I want to kill you," and then gets released back on the street, one has to wonder whose safety is the government worried about? Whose safety is the law worried about? Apparently, the man had been harassing a woman and her family for weeks before that. She had complained to the police. He was charged with it. Also threatening to kill her and her family. And then threatening a random Jewish guy on the street, "I'm going to kill you," and then released on bail. So you give the guy a condition. You can't go near your victim. You can't go near the people you threaten to kill. Is that really going to stop the man from going near the people he wanted to kill or actually killing the people he promised to kill? I don't think it will. I don't think it's enough of a deterrent for the guy to not go and commit the act that he claims he wants to commit. Now, this comes just a week or two after a man was brutally beaten, a Jewish man was brutally beaten in a park in broad daylight in front of his children. That guy was also arrested just a couple of days after the event happened. But he was sent to a mental institution for psychological evaluation because apparently, according to the court records, the heat of the day caused him to beat a random Jew in the street. You heard me right. The heat of the day caused him to beat a random Jew in the street. So here we have two cases of men who beat Jews or threatened to kill Jews, one who beat a Jew, one who threatened to kill a Jew. In about a week, it was less than a week apart, these two incidents. One of them was sent to a mental institution for a 30-day evaluation, which afterwards he'll probably be released back into the streets so he can go and beat more Jews. Only if it's a hot day, though. And the other one was released back into the streets after telling people he's going to kill them, after telling Jews, I'm coming to kill you. He was put back into the street. Why is there no outrage from Jewish leadership? Why is the Jewish leadership in Montreal so quiet? Why do I hear crickets when it comes to the story? Now, this story happened a few days ago. It didn't happen today. It happened a couple of days ago. And I still hear nothing, not a word. A short press release from Federation CJA, and that's it. Where are the Jews protesting the fact that a man who professed his will to kill Jews is back on the street? Where are the calls for protection? Where are the police promising the Jewish community that they're keeping an eye on this guy? Where is anybody saying that Jewish life matters? They're non-existent. Because in the lies of the governments of Canada, apparently Jewish life doesn't matter. They don't care. And if this guy goes about and kills a Jew, as he promised he would, after being released from the courts, he'll be charged with murder and then maybe get 12 years and then been released back in the streets. He'll go kill more Jews. It's an endless cycle of violence that's not being stemmed, not being stopped, not being slowed down by anybody, including our Jewish leaders. There's nobody screaming and yelling. Fortify the buildings, they say. Put in more security cameras. Spend tens of millions more dollars on security features for your immovable objects. But be scared when you walk down the street because some psycho who already professed his idea that he wants to go and kill people has been released from custody, free to go and kill people. Makes a lot of sense to me. But then again, if you put into the context of what's been happening in Montreal, in Canada, in North America, it makes perfect sense. Because if you think about it for a second, when you allow protesters to run down the streets every Sunday in Montreal and Toronto, you allow them to take over your streets, yelling globalized intifada, and yelling it loudly and yelling it clearly and holding up signs that say globalized intifada, then you can't really hold people accountable when they're actually globalizing the Intifada. We have to understand that. We have to understand that once the politicians and the lawmakers and the law enforcers agree that globalizing the Intifada is the right way to go, is the correct path forward, then random attacks on Jews, men threatening to kill Jews, people beating Jews in a park, is the definition of globalizing the Intifada. That is exactly what globalizing the Intifada is. The next step is, of course, bus bombings. Find a bus where Jews are on, or shoot up a bus of Jewish children, maybe a school bus, or bombing a cafe or a Jewish restaurant. Those are the next steps in globalizing the Intifada, because that's what the Intifada was. Random attacks on the Jewish population, terror attacks on the Jewish population. And until the government and until the lawmakers and until our community leaders want to call it what it is, terror, acts of terrorism, they're not acts of violence, they're not acts of vandalism, they're not acts of aggression, they're acts of terror against the Jewish community. And until they're willing to call it what it is, an act of terror, nothing is going to happen, nothing is going to get done. And until somebody dies, the Jewish leadership, the political leadership, and the law people are not going to take it seriously. Because Jews are an open target and nobody cares. In fact, we'll step it back a second, because about a year ago, maybe 2 years ago already, a man was killed at one of these pro-Hamas rallies in Los Angeles. He was hit on the head with a flagpole. Nobody talks about this anymore, but it happened. He was hit on the head with a flagpole. He died at the scene. His crime was holding an Israeli flag at a pro-Israel counter-protest. And the world forgot about him. There was no outrage about this. They said it was an accidental killing, that he was hit in the head by accident by a protester on the other side. Sure, that happened. It was accidental. He hit him accidentally. Killed him. Just like the guy in Saint Laurent is going to accidentally kill a Jew because he professed that he wanted to. And now that he's been released and he's been vilified, I mean, he's been vindicated, he's going to go and actually do it. And that will be accidental too. Oh, we didn't realize how dangerous he was. Oh, you mean he actually said that before and he carried through with what he threatened? Shocking. The vilification of the Jewish people has been happening too long and too often, and unopposed. Actually unopposed. You know, we yell at never again. I stopped going to Jewish events. I really did. Because every Jewish event is the same. They hide in a building somewhere, fortified by security guards, because we are afraid of our enemies. Instead of standing strong, we stand afraid. They give impassioned speeches about how we have to end this diplomatically, how we have to work with our politicians and our law enforcement, how everybody's great. Let's give plaques to the law enforcement people. Let's give plaques to the politician. Let's serve our platitudes and kiss the butts we have to kiss. And then what happens? The Jews get attacked. And these same people who are kissing the politicians' butts, these same people who are throwing out the platitudes, they remain quiet because they don't want to piss off their political leaders. They don't want to piss off the people that give them political favors when they need them. So they remain quiet. They don't push the politicians to do anything. And who suffers? You and me. The population, the Jewish population suffers. Women who want to go to the park with their children are afraid to go to the park with their children. Men who are afraid to walk down the streets wearing kippot or tzitzis hanging out. Children afraid to go to school. University students hiding their Jewishness and hiding their Judaism because they're afraid of being physically attacked on campus, and there's no repercussion if they are, so they hide their Judaism. We're not creating a generation of strong Jews. We're not creating a generation of Jews that will fight back. We're not creating a never again generation. We're creating a generation of Jews who are going to run away from Judaism because they're scared to be Jews. We're creating a generation of Jews who are hiding under rocks. And whose fault is this? Jewish leadership, 100%. The pulpit rabbis who do nothing. The heads of federation who say diplomacy is the best avenue when it's really not. The people who say we can't stoop down to their level, so we're not having any protests. The people who hide the fact that the Jewish community is under attack, and every single day there's an attack somewhere on the Jewish community. And they hide the information from the Jewish community because we don't want to elicit fear and we don't want to elicit rioting. No, what they don't want to elicit is people stopping to give money to Federation because they're not really protecting the Jewish population. That's what the big fear is, the slowing down of money. The Jewish elites are really not doing their jobs. But what do you expect? What do you expect from organizations that promote people to leadership roles based on the amount of donations they give? What do you expect when you have Jewish leaders who are more worried about their pocketbooks and more worried about how their business are going to react or how stocks are going to react than they are about the Jewish community? It's a sad state of affairs we're in, and we've gone there We've gone there. I've watched it. I've reported on it for years and years and years. We've talked about it on the show. I was so angry and so involved in exposing the corruption in our Jewish institutions that when the president of Federation at the time, it was about 10, 15 years ago, came to the radio station to do an interview on the radio station. They refused to do it on the most popular show, which was my show, refused to do the interview with me. In fact, they threw me out of studio and had another host come in to interview him because he refused to sit in studio with me. He was afraid of what I was going to ask him. I don't know if you've noticed, but in the last little while, I haven't had very many guests on the show. The people I asked to come onto the show are refusing to come onto the show with me because they were afraid of what I'm going to ask them. Because the capitulation of the Jewish leadership has caused us to be in the position we are in right now. The refusal of Federation to install and infuse and pay for martial arts trainings for children in elementary and high school. The refusal of institutions, leadership of institutions, leaders of institutions, the leadership, the refusal of them to get up and be vocal, the fear that they feel about being vocal about supporting the Jewish community. And by the way, there is an exception to that rule. We'll get to him in a second. It's cowardice. And that's what we're dealing with, cowardice. The exception to the rule is Hampstead Mayor Jeremy Levy, who is not afraid to stand up and say what he has to say. He's not afraid to stand up for the Jewish community, not afraid to stand up for Israel. And he takes it right on the nose and he gives it right back. Over the weekend, the Israeli flag in front of City Hall of Hampstead, Hampstead put up an Israeli flag at half-mast after October 7th. And said they will not take it down until the last of the hostages are released. And it's been up there since the hostages were taken over 600 days ago. And kudos to the Hampstead City Council, the Hampstead Town Council, and their mayor for having the guts to do this. But the flag was lit on fire this past week. The flag was lit on fire in front of the Town Hall of Hampstead, the Israeli flag. Now, it's not unusual for anti-Israel protesters to light the Israeli flag on fire. But every time it happens, one has to think about the book burnings and how fire has affected the Jewish people over the centuries. We have to remember that it starts with burning Israeli flags and ends with burning Jewish synagogues. Now, a lot of people criticize me because they say I conflate Judaism and Zionism, that anti-Zionism is not anti-Jewism, that they're two totally separate things. Well, you know, I started believing that. People were yelling at me, and I started believing that until today. And today, I realized that anti-Jewism and anti-Zionism is exactly the same thing. One is just a mask of the other. So anti-Zionists are just pure anti-Jewites. They hate the Jews. Now, Ahed Tamimi was never an innocent child. Now, if you don't know who she is, she's a little redhead girl. At least she was a little redhead girl. She appeared in all the Palestinian propaganda films that were released about 10 years ago. She was young and she spat in the face of Israeli soldiers and she jumped on tanks and she was arrested multiple times. And she's now 24 years old. And she was on her podcast, an Arabic language podcast on YouTube. And she admitted on the podcast, she clearly stated that her fight was never against Zionism. It was always against Jews. This is the quote. She said, "Judaism means occupation." She said, "Today, tomorrow, and a million years from now, I'll repeat that, Judaism means occupation." She bragged during her show that Palestinians are superior to the entire world. She sneered that the whole world needs to shut up when a Palestinian is talking. And she went even further than that. She said she wished for a World War III. Whoever dies, dies. Drop nuclear bombs, destroy the world. I don't care. Now, if you think about this, this is not resistance. This is not saving Palestine. This is not a fight against Israeli aggression. This is anti-Judaism at its rawest. Now, of course, the left-wing media and left-wing organizations made her into a hero over the years. They put her picture on flyers and on posters. They quoted her. They invited her to speak. She was the Greta Thunberg of the Palestinian cause before Greta Thunberg jumped into the Palestinian cause. And at the end of the day, she's just a Jew hater. But she's not alone. She's not alone. She is a Jew hater, but she was raised a Jew hater. She was raised in the Palestinian Authority, and they raised her as a Jew hater. So, what could you say? Could you really blame her? But there are many Jew haters out there. There are Jew haters who are part of the community. You have Jews for Palestine who are just Jew-hating Jews. They stand with murderers. You have the Naturi Karta, the Hasidic group, that stands with people who have blood on their hands killing Jews. They stand there, and they call Jews Nazis, even though their ancestors were killed by Nazis, and they know the difference between Nazism and Zionism. They know the difference between what Israel is doing to protect itself and what the Nazis did to destroy the Jewish people. Yet they stand there week after week, month after month, wearing keffiyehs and holding up signs accusing Jews of committing Nazi atrocities against the Arabs. They're not. The famine in Gaza doesn't exist. The UN actually, and you can look this up, it's actually true. The UN actually changed the definition, their official definition of famine, to fit what's happening in Gaza. So you see, the Gaza situation didn't actually fit the UN definition of what a famine is. So they changed their definition to fit into what's happening in Gaza. Why would they do that, you ask? Well, simply because they hate Jews, they hate Israel, and so this was a way to attack Israel again. Nobody ever mentions, and it's been a long time, nobody's ever mentioned that this whole war started when Hamas entered Israel and decided to massacre over 1,000 people on October 7th. And now I know people are yelling at me, how are you? October 7th, October 7th. Stop mentioning October 7th. You know, they said that about Holocaust too. They said the Jews are using the Holocaust as an excuse to hurt the Palestinians, as an excuse to oppress the Palestinians. And then after October 7th, now the Jews are using October 7th as an excuse to oppress the Palestinians. Wait a second. Let me understand something. So if this logic is true, if this argument is actually factual, what you are saying is that the Jews are using a massacre to justify massacring other people? It doesn't even make sense. It makes no sense. But that's what they claim. That's what the world media continues to report. And that's what people are paid to scream at these rallies. And it works. The propaganda works. Unfortunately, people buy into it, which is why 80 rabbis, including a Montreal rabbi, Rabbi Michael Whitman of the Adath Israel congregation in Hampstead, signed a letter condemning Israel and calling for Israel to work with morality when it comes to this famine and this famine in Gaza and the attack in Gaza. The letter is called A Call for Moral Clarity, Responsibility, and a Jewish Orthodox Response in the Face of the Gaza Humanitarian Crisis. Now, these rabbis, with all due respect to them, were awfully silent when bombs and missiles were falling on the heads of the civilians of southern Israel right after Israel evacuated Gaza. And for the next 15 years or 20 years, bombs were falling on the heads of Israelis in southern Israel. These rabbis were awfully silent about that. They didn't write a letter to Hamas saying, hey, stop dropping bombs. Where's the humanitarian aspect of dropping bombs on the heads of Israelis? Because once again, the indiscriminate attack on Jews is okay. Call it a disputed territory, call it disputed land, and suddenly it's okay to attack anybody. But it only works one way. And when somebody commits a war crime against the Jewish people, like Hamas did on October 7th, it's okay to ignore that war crime and then yell that Israel's the aggressor when they go to retaliate, when they go to wipe Hamas off the face of the earth. A genocidal attack on Jews is okay. But a retaliatory strike in defense, in self-defense, that prompts 80 rabbis to write a letter to Israel condemning them. It's amazing. It's shockingly fascinating. But then again, why would I be shocked? Why should I be shocked? Let's move over to Toronto, the Toronto International Film Festival, who decided that the October 7th movie, a movie about October 7th, couldn't be shown at the festival because the footage that they used of the massacre, because Hamas wasn't shy about live streaming their murder spree, their genocidal murder spree, they weren't shy about live streaming it. But the Toronto International Film Festival decided that Hamas had to sign off on the footage, or the footage was copyrighted by Hamas and couldn't be shown at the festival. So they dropped the October 7th movie. Now that would be okay. I mean, not okay, because it's a ridiculous obligation to put on somebody to get a terror group to sign off on footage of them committing terroristic massacres. That seems kind of crazy. And there is a fair use. And even if you want to claim that Hamas owns the footage of their live streaming the October 7th massacre, even if you want to make that ridiculous claim, which the Toronto International Film Festival did, there is a fair usage clause in every copyright law around the world, which allows news organizations to use it and documentaries to use copyrighted footage as long as it's credited. So the only criteria they should have put on to the documentary maker was putting a little, I mean, it's so stupid talking about this. It's ridiculous. I'm sorry I'm laughing. It's a serious topic, but this is such a ridiculous situation. You can't help but laugh. The filmmaker could have been required to put on footage courtesy of Hamas on the bottom of the screen, which would have been a ridiculous thing to put on the bottom of the screen when you're showing Hamas recorded videos of their murder of Jews. But in any case, that wasn't the demand. The demand was getting Hamas to sign off on it, which is ludicrous, a ludicrous request. And so the Toronto International Film Festival pulled it from their schedule. Now, of course, a couple of the politicians trying to earn brownie points got involved, including MP Anthony Hostfather, who was trying to earn brownie points with the Jewish community. He got involved, and suddenly the Toronto International Film Festival decided, oh, okay, let's reverse our decision and show the movie. So they chose one Wednesday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon to show the film. Now, that's not prime time. That's not anywhere close to prime time. That's not red carpet. That's let's hide it in the middle of the afternoon so nobody sees it, a time period. Now, the Palestinian Film Festival, which has partnered with the Toronto International Film Festival for years and celebrates Nakba Day, commemorates Nakba Day, which is the founding of the State of Israel, the Great Catastrophe, and produces films. And shows films, the Palestinian Film Festival shows films that are not very, that aren't pro-Palestinian, they're just anti-Israel. Those films are allowed to be shown and will be shown in prime time during the Toronto International Film Festival. So the film on October 7th, showing the massacre of Jews, is buried on a Wednesday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. But the Toronto International Film Festival will show the Palestinian Film Festival films at 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock in prime time. With red carpet, of course. Once again, Jewish blood is cheap. Nobody cares. Nobody wants to promote or indulge Jews in the fact that they were massacred and they just want to show their story. Nobody cares. So let me be clear, because I know that I'm always misquoted. So let me be extremely clear. The humanitarian disaster in Gaza, and there is a humanitarian disaster in Gaza. People are suffering in Gaza. But unfortunately, it is not the fault of Israel. It is the fault of the government of Gaza, which is Hamas, since 2006. Hamas decided to attack Israel, and there's a repercussion when any country decides to attack another country. And Hamas was an elected government, which means that Gaza was a country. And since Gaza was a country and they attacked another country, they have to face the consequences of their government's actions. So that is the first thing. In the laws of war, this is the first time that any country has been forced to give aid to the country that attacked them and murdered their citizens. It is a crazy situation, but Israel's being held to that standard. Why aid is not going through the Rafah border crossing through Egypt is beyond me. It's closed. My guess is that if they open Rafah and they put aid in through Rafah, then they can't blame Israel when they blocked the aid. But Israel didn't block the aid. That's the whole thing. Hundreds of trucks and thousands of pounds of aid are still sitting in UN holding facilities because the distributors, the truck drivers who distribute it, are afraid to distribute it because they've been hijacked by Hamas, who steal the loot. So thousands and thousands of pounds of food are being held in warehouses instead of being distributed to the people. And just recently, the Americans and the Israelis came up with a new organization that's going to try to distribute it directly to the people. So making the claim that Israel is committing a genocide, making the claim that Israel is withholding aid, is total malarkey. And it's a propaganda stunt by the Palestinian leadership, by the Palestinian Liberation Organization leadership and Hamas, to malign Israel yet again with another blood libel. So let's be very clear. Now, you may have seen, and this really disgusts me, you may have seen pictures and videos of people with their hands painted red. And they say, oh, our hands are painted red. Look, we have red hands. And they say it, and they hold them up, their red hands, they hold them up in protest of the Israeli government. The origin of those red hands is sickening. In 2000, two Israeli reservists lost way. They took a wrong turn and ended up in Ramallah. And they were driving through Ramallah. They didn't know where they were. They were trying to get out of there. They didn't mean to go there. They were supposed to go somewhere else, and they made a wrong turn. They ended up in Ramallah. And they were trying to get out of Ramallah when they were stopped by Ramallah Police Department, the police of Ramallah. And the police of Ramallah, which were Palestinian Liberation Organization police, which under the Oslo Accords were cooperating with the Israeli army, these two reservists, army soldiers who were in uniform, were taken by the Ramallah police to the Ramallah police station, where they were beaten to death by thugs, by Jew-hating thugs who came into the police station and beat them to death. Their only crime was wearing an Israeli army uniform and making a wrong turn and ending up in Ramallah. They were beaten to death. And after they were beaten, there was a young man who went to the window of the Ramallah police station and held up his hands that were red with the blood of these two Israeli soldiers. So when people hold up their hands with red blood, with red paint on their hands, that is a call for the death of the Israeli soldiers. But they verbalize it now anyway. Haven't you heard the latest slogan? Death, death to the IDF? That's allowed. That's okay. I reported a couple of death, death to the IDF posters on Facebook, and apparently Facebook said it didn't violate their community standards. Apparently you're allowed to call for the death of people. I put up a poster calling death, death to Hamas. and I reported it myself. It was taken down immediately. The algorithms are anti-Israel. The world is anti-Israel. But anti-Israel isn't anti-Israel, because as we heard, anti-Israel means anti-Jewish. We are in big trouble. Jews are in huge trouble. And how do we get out of this trouble? What do we do to protect ourselves? We can't rely on the leadership, because the leadership has been inactive. We can't rely on the politicians, because the politicians just serve us with platitudes and don't do anything to help us. We could only rely on ourselves. As Vladimir Jabotinsky walked through Europe yelling to the Jews, the Nazis are coming, the catastrophe's coming, get out of Europe while you can. The Jews sat with deaf ears. They laughed at him. They didn't let him speak at their synagogues. They maligned him. And Jabotinsky kept screaming, and nobody listened. And 6 million Jews ended up burned in the ovens of Auschwitz. We can't let that happen again. Never again has to mean something. We must stand up. We must defend ourselves. We must encourage the Jewish community to start the process of leaving and going to Israel. We must be clear. We must be concise. We must be strong. For heaven's sake, we can't sit quietly. Never again means never again. Let's start acting like it. I'm Howie Subiger. It's the Howie Subiger Show on the True Talk Radio Network. I'll see you next time.